Struggling to keep track of your story and world? Archivos is for you. More intuitive than a wiki, more extensible than Scrivener, Archivos builds your story bible into your personal, always-on tactical display. Graphical relationship charting, continuity tools, this thing has it all, with bonus options for fan engagement and real-time collaboration. Archivos, story world management done right. www.archivos.digital. That's www.archivos.digital. Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer, author of nearly 30 books, more than 30 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, coming to you from up in the crow's nest with my spyglass on this daily voyage through the dicey waters of business, craft, learning, and art in the writing life. Welcome to The Questions, episode 868.
Hello!
Welcome back to a new recording block of The Everyday Novelist. We are really, really low on questions and series ideas. As of this recording date, which means the date that you hear this broadcast or podcast, we've only got 4 episodes left. 2 questions and the final 2 episodes in our dialogue series. So anybody who can send in questions, ideas for series, etc., now would be the time, because we do not want to go on extended leaves of absence at this point. That would kind of suck. So please do send in your questions, comments, criticisms, attaboys, death threats, feedback, and ideas for new series at feedback@jdsawyer.net, in the contact form at everydaynovelist.com, or by leaving something on the forum at www.jdsawyer.net/forum. Today we have a question from a gorgeous and wonderful listener who has sent us material for a new episode, Charles. Charles asks,
"When I was a young man, I wore a younger man's clothes and thought a younger man's thoughts, and I could write any time, any place, without fear getting in my way. I would open a notebook and slide a fresh sheet of paper into a typewriter and just go. Now, as an older man, I no longer find it easy to write. I have studied and gained knowledge on approaches to planning, writing, plotting, and other ink and paper pursuits. But I also feel the great trepidation of failure bearing on my shoulders. I am not trying to write for money, just for completion. I am not trying to be a world-renowned novelist, just a novelist with books completed and self-published. How do I find that youthful naivety to be able to write without a care in the world of failure or success, but to complete the words that I begin? I still have ideas, which become notes, but nothing more. My inner self procrastinates for fear of starting, much less finishing anything. I think as a writer, but I do not act like one anymore, and I want it back. I would forego all knowledge learned in the past 30 years just to be able to write the simple words of my high school self again. Or is this an impossibility now? How do I mentally reset myself?"
Well, obviously you need to go into a store that caters to young hipster males and steal a bunch of clothes.
Or buy them.
Okay. Well, sorry, I couldn't resist.
Or if you do go this route, go to a Goodwill or a thrift store right, in a young urban area, because there's no sense spending full price on clothes.
Or risking
ever.
Prison. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I couldn't resist. By the way, I did love the reference to Piano Man. There is something glorious to be said for being too stupid to know when you're licked. Like with so many other things in life, the problem with getting older is not getting older, it's not being young anymore. You get so much out of what you learn by getting older and getting better, but the thing that you lose along the way very often, unless you're really vigilant about cultivating it, is the ability to look at things like a child And without that ability, you actually can't learn much. And you can't take risks that you know, as an adult, are stupid. The problem is that creativity is stupid. By which I don't mean useless. I mean, creativity is by definition risky, very highly risky. It's risky emotionally, it's risky financially, it's risky socially. And the reason it's risky is because creativity involves the crossing of boundaries. And the crossing of boundaries is something that we learn through experience that other people just don't put up with. Sometimes they may burn us at the stake for heresy, sometimes they may call us completely lame and not worth paying attention to. But either way, it stings. You put the finger right on it. What you have to do is risk. All flavors of procrastination boil down to one of two problems. And both of these problems, well, they actually eventually reduce to each other. But the two problems are fear and priority confusion. And actually, the priority confusion is at the bottom of that stack. Because when you put something off because you're afraid, you're insecure, you don't know how you're going to finish it, you know it's not going to be as good as you want it to be, you're not sure you'll be able to make money at it, whatever it is. What you're doing is you are choosing, not consciously, subconsciously, you are choosing to value your feeling of fear over your feeling of ambition or the anticipated negative outcomes. You're choosing to value avoiding those above doing the thing that you're putting off. In college, it's easy to see this when you're procrastinating writing a term paper because you'd rather party or watch a movie or do anything else. But the same mechanic underlies all procrastination. It is a choice that you make to place a greater value on something other than the thing that you're telling yourself is the thing you care most about. Well, if you're procrastinating, it means that it's not what you care most about. And if that bothers you, you have to rejigger your value structure. And you have to do it on purpose, because if this is happening unconsciously, then the only way to get over it is to rehabituate yourself. And that, like forming any new habit, takes work. It takes conscious effort. And the way that you make a new habit stick is you associate the conscious effort with less pain, distress, and more gain of some sort than the value that you'd get out of not doing that thing. Losing weight is hard because exercise is no fun. Eating is really fun. Eating is easy. Exercise takes effort. And so it's a lot easier just to do things the way that you're accustomed to doing them instead of to put the work into forming new habits that, once you're habituated to them, will be just as pleasant and ordinary as the old habits. So the way you do it with something like that is you change one piece of the habit at a time so that it's manageable, and then once it's on autopilot, then you look at the next thing. There was a wonderful meme going around during the GameStop rebellion a couple of weeks ago, where the insurgents were taking to social media and saying, "We can stay stupid longer than you can stay solvent." What that meant is they were deliberately taking a risk that they knew was stupid, that most of them were going to lose their shirts on, in order to make a point and have fun while doing it. So they considered what they were doing spending an entertainment dollar, or several thousand entertainment dollars in some of them, in some case. But they knew that it would work as long as they were deliberately stupid in large enough numbers. What fundamental investors would call irrationality, and instead valuing things that technical traders are interested in, momentum, volatility, and that sort of thing. Now, that stuff is inherently irrational for anyone but a gambler. But this was a group that was interested in gambling. As a creative person, you have to, let me back up a step. As a creative person who is in a world where creativity is marketable, you've got two hats you have to wear, and they're fundamentally opposed. The first half you have to wear is the stupid risk taker who doesn't care about being sensible. You're willing to cross creative, social, religious boundaries, whatever it is that hangs you up, where you find your creative frisson, personal boundaries in your head, hopefully, not out on the street or in the subway where you can get decked or arrested for crossing personal boundaries uninvited. You have to cross these boundaries in a way that is fundamentally foolish, because the chances of it working, starting from a standing start, are basically zero. Except that you're not starting from a standing start. You have the sum total of all of the wisdom and savvy that you've earned over the years, but what it's done is it's made you cautious because of that other hat you have to wear. The other hat is the sensible business person. The one that tries to figure out how this thing is going to hit the market. What's it going to be like when my parents or my wife or my kids read this thing? What will they think of me? Will they think I'm awful? Will they think I'm wasting my life? Will they think I'm stupid? Those are the questions that a business person asks. And you're asking them at the stage of creativity where you're supposed to be stupid. When you ask these questions in the wrong context, you suck the life out of life and you make it not worth living. One of the great joys of a long-term romantic relationship is that you have someone with whom you can be childish and stupid and completely dumb. And every once in a while, the sum total of your mutual childishness and stupidity turns into something sublime, either a fantastic erotic encounter, or an amazing memory of travel, or a night when you spend the whole time in stitches because you're both making dumb jokes that only occur to you at 3 a.m. on 4 glasses of scotch. That freedom is what makes the rest of life sparkle. It reminds you what it's all for. You can't bring your inhibitions into your creative space. Creativity is the whole idea of creativity is what the Hebrews called abomination. It is the crossing of boundaries that should not be crossed. You put a little column A together with a little column B in a way that nobody has before, and you put it together with column C, which is inside of you, and you have something new in the world. Now, it might be so new that no one can recognize it. It might be pretty ordinary because a lot of people have done it before, but it's new to you, and so you get something out of it. Or it might hit that beautiful middle ground where it hits the human universal, and you get something that appeals to a broad swath of your fellow human beings. But you can't know what it's going to be a priori. The advice that writers give to other younger writers is all very much meant to be take it or leave it depending on what works for you. And you can't treat it like dogma. For every writing rule you've ever heard, including every one that I've ever propounded, I can point to a half dozen examples of people who ignore it and are fantastic. Because they know how to break that rule. The rules are not rules. They're rules of thumb. They're heuristics. They're guidelines that people pick up, noticing this tends not to work except in weird circumstances. Those are good things to know, because if you're going to take those risks, you don't want to be retreading the ground that everybody else treads when they try to take them. You want to be pushing into ground where you might be able to make something special happen. But you don't want to take them as gospel. Thou shalt not fail to use an Oxford comma is a dumb commandment, and it doesn't come from God. You have to find the emotional space, the mental space, and they're not always the same thing. Emotional space is a bit deeper and less cognitive. You need to find the emotional space and the cognitive space to fuck around. To be like the kid with the mud pies. The freedom to play. Creativity at root, the reason that having the beginner's mindset is really useful is that beginners have no choice but to play. You're burdened down with the wrong kind of performance pressure. You're burdened down by the fear that it won't be right. In the case of writing, or in doing anything else creative, you're trying to rediscover the habit of freedom. Adulthood is about accepting limitations and working within them, but that's the opposite of what creativity is about. Creativity is about not accepting limitations. It's about mixing things that are not normally mixed. So you have to do whatever you can to cultivate the mental habit of freedom and to bring that to your work on the page. Discipline will help. You get in front of the computer for an hour a day, 2 hours a day, whatever it is, no matter what, and you work on that project that you have in front of you, no matter what, and if you don't put any words down, well, then you've wasted the time, but you don't get to do anything else. You don't get to look at Twitter, you don't get to look at your phone, you don't get to browse the web, you get to do nothing else. And the failure of wasting that time and not putting anything on the page will motivate you. And will it motivate you enough? That's hard to say. That's going to vary by person, and it may vary by project. So once you get that down, you look for the next thing. What's blocking you up? What are you afraid of? Are you afraid that your wife will read it and want to divorce you? Well, then you've got a problem in your marriage, don't you? And you need to either work on the problem of your marriage, or you need to make a deal that you're not going to show it to your wife, or you need to make a deal with her that she's not going to read it. Same thing with your kids. Are you worried that they're going to find out that you write things that they're not allowed to read, or that would embarrass them at school, or that they'd look kind of sideways at you about? Well, then you write under a pen name and you don't tell them what it is. You find out what every one of the hundreds of little obstructions are in your way, and you just knock them out one at a time. But if you've got a shortcut, say, for example, listening to a particular band's music or a particular composer unlocks you and makes your creativity flow, well, then you do that. Anything positive you can do. Rituals. For example, I'm not a smoker. I hate cigarettes. I don't like the health effects. I don't get anything out of nicotine. I tried to smoke when I was younger because it was cool. My lungs don't like it. I hate it. But if I have a pipe or a cigar or a vape with me, being able to blow smoke rings makes me relax. I don't inhale anything, I take it into my mouth and I blow smoke rings, and that brings my headspace back to The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, and those opening scenes where Gandalf and Frodo are blowing smoke rings with each other. And that is a special place in my heart that means that I can access what it was to be a child and to have read those books when I was 7 years old. And to be so excited about the discovery and the daring and the basic grounded sensuality that was part of those books. Now, I've done enough of this kind of mental work that I don't need those things in order to write. But oh boy, if I've got writer's block, you better believe I'll have a pipe in my hand or a cigar in my hand, because that pushes me past. I've always got tea in my hand when I write, because the flavor of iced tea has always been part of my creative ritual, because it was part of my play rituals as a kid. I couldn't stand drinking soda all the time, even though I loved it, and we were too poor to afford it often anyway, but I couldn't stand drinking it all the time because it left that taste in your mouth, it's so sugary, I don't have much of a sweet tooth. But iced tea was brilliant. It was tannic and sparkly and refreshing, and it gave me an excuse to stay hydrated when I got heat sick a lot. And so I was always drinking the hell out of the iced tea when I was a kid. And so whenever I write, I've got iced tea. Always. They're little habits, little rituals that tell the deep parts of my brain that it's time to play. It's time to be creative. And you need to find those things or develop those things for you. By sheer coincidence, I actually read a book last week that fully half of the book is devoted to teaching you how to form these habits. It's called How to Lose at Almost Everything and Still Win Big. It's Scott Adams' autobiography, the creator of Dilbert. And fully half of it is about how you train your brain away from bad habits and towards good habits so that you enjoy the good habits and they're not work. And I would highly recommend it. It might help you unlock. But whatever you can do to get away from all the advice you've read, because at the end, all of it is expendable. The only thing that matters when you sit down at the keyboard is the connection between your mind and the screen through your fingers. There are rules of fiction in the sense that we all have templates of how stories are supposed to work that we've acquired through the process of acculturation and language acquisition and all sorts of stuff like that. But what makes fiction exciting is not that it follows the rules. It's that it only follows them when it needs to. It's the breaking of the rules. It's the small surprises. That's what people come to fiction for. Some readers like a little bit of surprise. Romance readers. People who read very formulaic genre fiction. And some readers like a lot of surprises. People who read really edgy science fiction. People who read literary fiction. They're different kinds of surprises they're looking for. But they're on the prowl for surprises. So there's an audience for whatever area of surprise you do. If you're doing highly experimental stuff, there's a good chance that most of it will fail. But as long as you learn from those failures and conserve the successes, you ratchet up. So all of the advice that everybody else gives you, myself included, about how to do stories, how this thing works, how that thing works, those are useful to you as tools you can pull off a shelf when you need them. But they are not commandments, and they are all expendable. All that matters is you and what you have to say. I hope that helps. Thank you for sending it in, Charles. It's always been a delight to have your questions on the show over the years, and I hope you keep sending them in, but not listening to the answers that don't serve you. I want you to win. Find your space and make your stories. I'll see you tomorrow.
The Everyday Novelist is written by J. Daniel Sawyer and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and Kitty McKeon and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2019 J. Daniel Sawyer and the production is copyright 2019 Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners.
Join the conversation. Submit a question, leave a comment, or a creative death threat. Or find me at jdsawyeronminds.com or hit me at feedback@jdsawyer.net. We can't do it without you.